in about 6 months' time from launch, we had an NPS, a Net Promoter Score, of 91, where most airlines, actually the airline average at the time was 15.
You're listening to Defining Moments, a podcast presented by Lendio. I'm your host, Chris McKee, and during each episode, I'll be telling you the stories of real leaders and entrepreneurs who understand the power of perseverance, prioritizing, and pivoting. Scott Porter, welcome to the show.
Chris, it is great to be with you today. Thanks for having me.
Scott, we'd love to dive into this. We're excited for the conversation. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, your entrepreneurial journey, just a little bit about you and where you came from and where you're at now.
Oh, man. What a journey it has been and continues to be. So much learning and fun and heartache and craziness and excitement and all rolled into one over the past years of my little bit eclectic career path. So I'm an entrepreneur and have been like working my entire life. You know, I believe my first entrepreneurial endeavor was underneath my parents' staircase in our basement. That was my reporter's office. I did a neighborhood newsletter on where people went on vacation, what their parents did, different things like that. And I typed it up on a typewriter and did these interviews with people in my neighborhood and then copied those and sold those for like 25 cents each back to the same people that I interviewed. And I think I was probably 10 years old, 9 or 10 years old. And so ever since then, it's just been a wild ride. I've had this entrepreneurial bug deeply embedded into my soul. And so I can't deny the power that has been in all of my life choices. So yeah, I've been an entrepreneur ever since and working on fulfilling my dreams and pursuing them in very unexpected ways. And so that's looked like everything from, you know, well, I was the first employee at a new public relations agency in Seattle out of undergrad, worked there for about 5 years, then went back to business school, and then unexpectedly took a position working for a nursing home company and worked in the administration and executive direction of a couple of nursing homes in Southern California. Then dipped my toe in the corporate waters for about 2 years, working for the corporate executive board in Washington, D.C., and then went back into senior healthcare, ran a home health agency for a couple of years in Southern California. Then we launched an airline called Surf Air, the first all-you-can-fly membership subscription airline. And then that naturally leads to the churro business, which is what I'm doing now. And I'm working on another couple of projects as well. In between all of that, launched a nonprofit called Singular Humanitarian. My brother and I launched a toy and game company and with the game Reverse Charades, and just kind of been involved in an eclectic smattering of things with some things that haven't worked out in the past that have kind of helped forge that path as well. So, I mean, that kind of brings you up to speed to where we're at right now.
You're an entrepreneur to your core. Would you say that?
Yes, absolutely. It's when I talk with other entrepreneurs or go grab tacos or whatever we're doing, it's this collective, it's like the crazy group, right? It's these people that have this insatiable desire to take the risks, to create, to just like move out of their comfort zone. And uncomfortable is where we thrive, and with high levels of ambiguity. And it's like there's a serious dose of insanity in all of that.
I can absolutely understand that. And the interesting thing is you keep bringing up, you know, the transitions that you've had. And a lot of people, as they hear your story, you know, they probably would ask successive questions. Well, why nursing homes? Well, why airlines? Why churros?
You know, you've gone from one industry to the next, to the next, to the next, based off of probably a foundation of a singular philosophy. To start off there, why nursing homes? Why did you go from graduate school into nursing homes? And why did your journey start there?
That's a great question. And it was a place where I never in a million years thought that my journey would start. Or, you know, I mean, I think my journey started long before that and kind of set the foundation for what you're explaining. I've always felt and been blessed and told and inspired by people throughout my life with this concept and idea of and drive, really, like deep internal drive to make a difference in people's lives and to make the world a better place. And this has been something that I've wanted to marry with my professional endeavors. I think all of us feel a desire to, I mean, it's something that's just, it's innate inside us. We want to make a difference. We want to step outside of ourselves. We want to help others progress and love and grow and develop. And I have always felt and been continually looking for opportunities for my profession to reflect that. Obviously, taking me on a really wild ride through, you know, a number of seemingly disparate industries and experiences. But that has always been a driving factor in my decision-making process of where to spend my time. I just want my life to be spent doing that, making a difference for others. And so how can I do that? And what type of path can I put myself on where I can either learn the skills that will help me in the future to do that more effectively, or where the impact can be felt deeply and hopefully eventually exponentially felt as well. And so that's kind of a long answer to your question, but my thought process when I came across this opportunity, there were several things that I remember interviewing and having a discussion with Jay Brady and going through the process with the nursing home company, the Ensign Group, and being very struck by this opportunity to, it was super entrepreneurial. I mean, basically, like, they gave you the keys to a nursing home that was a distressed nursing home. So whether that's regulatory or financial or, you know, reputation in the community, underperforming, et cetera. And you were given the tools and ability and all the support to basically run that as your own business. And so that type of autonomy and creativity and responsibility was super exciting to me. And the biggest driving factor for me was that I never dreamt of working in a nursing home. Like, I don't know of very many people that do.
Right.
And what really was interesting to me was this idea of my actions and influence can very instantly make a difference in people's lives. No one, like, meaning residents and family members, no one wants to be in a nursing home, but I was incredibly driven by this challenge to turn that perception around and to make a difference in people's lives. And if I can help inspire my team to a higher cause and to love and provide a great service that makes people feel special and different and important, and in turn do that for my team as well, then I was surprisingly, like, all on board. And I'm like, what am I doing? I've never imagined that I would be doing this. And I felt it was a game changer for me in my professional development and in my career. So that was really the impetus and the catalyst for me moving into the nursing home business, was this idea of making a difference in people's lives. And the challenge too of changing perceptions and turning something sour into something sweet.
So how did you do that? I mean, as you said, I mean, it was this catalyst, this impetus for change. I mean, what did you do to change something that was sour, or, you know, you have this implicit assumption that it's just a very negative experience, into something that is good, something that can benefit others and change people's lives?
Well, when the first nursing home that I ran in the Pasadena area, Mission Care and Rehab, when we took over the facility, it was a distressed property. It was bankrupt, had about 50% occupancy. We had about 200 direct competitors within a 10-mile radius.
200, you said?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
And so no one really knew about us. We were tucked away in this like block of retirement buildings. And, you know, it was difficult for the staff to attract people when we took over. And so it was a combination of a lot of things. But I looked at, I mean, first of all, one of the most important things was bringing on a business partner, a director of nursing, that we were completely aligned in our desires to not only turn it around, become reputable, become profitable, and, you know, perform exceptionally well, but to really truly make a difference in people's lives and to create a special place. And so I found that in Elizabeth Darden, and she is just was an absolute rock star that I can't, she's like the first lady of Guatemala. I mean, like dressed to the nines, this like
oh, wow.
Wildly brilliant nurse, clinician. And she has this absolutely unicorn characteristic of exceptional clinical skills with exceptional understanding of the business side and marketing and experience and creating something and this ability to lift and inspire her nursing staff and the entire team. Like it was absolute divine intervention to find and meet, and then a blessing for the rest of my life to have worked along at her side for the years that we did. So I had to get the right partner on board. And when I did, we were unstoppable. And so what that looked like for us was just fierce adherence to the bringing to life of our mission and values. And obviously putting all the systems in place with just like operation systems, but like doing that with a soul, you know, like we had to make sure that our team felt inspired by what we were doing and we're continually reinforcing that. And so I remember this one night I came home, you know, we built an extraordinary team with like a leadership team within the facility as well. I brought my brother on board, his first job out of school as our marketing director. And he just like is an absolute rock star and just hit the ground running, was tearing through everything possible to help build the facility. But it essentially was this amazing combination of team. We had our rehab director and everyone that was all on board with bringing to life our mission and values, which were, you know, to create this extraordinary experience for our residents and our guests. And so I started to study. I remember I came home one night and I'm like, gosh, you know what? I had this little bit of an epiphany that's like transformed the trajectory of my life since then. Gosh, we have this awesome mission and values, but what guarantee do I have when I go home at night that the night shift is continuing to, like, how bought in are they to bringing this to life, you know, to actually making this happen? Sure, we can monitor that and keep tabs on it when we're there, but how do I keep my team at every level of the organization motivated, rewarded, recognized, engaged in making all of that happen? And so I started to become this just voracious student of customer experience and marketing. And how, because I thought, gosh, first of all, we don't have any money.
That's a huge key right there, though. We don't have any money. So that, I'm sure that influenced a lot.
For sure. It's like we took over a bankrupt situation. And so we didn't have any money. What were we going to do to stand out among all of these direct competitors? And I figured, gosh, if we could create an experience that was so different and so special that we caused people to become raving fans and to actively and proactively be talking about us outside of the facility. And so I started to study and read and like learn from and pick principles from everyone from Trader Joe's to In-N-Out to Disney, Ritz-Carlton, Zappos, Chick-fil-A, and looking to see what they did to create an experience that people talk about it at the dinner table with, and no one's giving them any compensation for that. You know what I mean? Like, they're creating something that's so awesome that it's coming up in dinner conversation. And so that's what I developed a system and framework that we implemented at Mission Care. And that's built on, you know, daily practices and reinforcement and the whole cadence and schedule of continued cultural reinforcement. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And then I've developed a whole like levels of achievement based on cultural competency and encouraging our team and motivating and rewarding them for really living our culture on a regular basis. And so that transformed Mission Care within a year. I mean, it's not an instant process, because you're building up, first of all, you're investing time and some money, but time and effort into your team to bring them on board, to get the wrong people off your team, to bring on the right people and get everyone collectively working towards this, bringing to pass your mission. And so within a year, we went from bankruptcy to 4.5 in annual revenue, $1 million in annual revenue. We became a reputable facility in the area. You know, we were able to attract and retain top talent. You know, our occupancy was up to about, I think it was about 88 or 90%. And I think one of the kind of the feathers in your cap in the nursing home business is when doctors themselves refer their parents to stay at your facility.
I'm sure that's the biggest compliment, for sure.
Yeah. And we had a number of those doctors do that with us. And that word gets out. And so what that looked like, the crazy thing about this, Chris, is all of this stems on the creation of this extraordinary, like, breakthrough brand experience. And what this means is this is a combination of all sorts of little things that consistently delivered create this experience that make people feel special, and where you walk in the door and you feel like, oh, this place is different. There's something special going on here. Now, that doesn't mean that we're perfect, but there's something special going on. It's so many simple things. It's like smiling, having eye contact, calling people by name, treating people with respect, answering call lights. You know, like one of our things was that everyone that came in the door, we offered them a bottle of water. When our nurses would pass anyone visiting in the hallway, they would greet them by name and confidently look them in the eye and smile. When a doctor would come to visit and do their rounds, like, we would have his or her favorite chocolate bar waiting for them, you know?
That's above and beyond. That's great.
You know, it was just like all of Van Gogh's paintings, you know? Up close, those small little paint strokes don't necessarily look like something beautiful until you step back and see the collective of all of them together. And so that's really what this creation of the experience is all these micro interactions where we're really essentially just humanizing the experience. Instead of calling people by, oh, you know, can you go give 5B an IV? Can you go give 14C, they need their briefs changed? Those are humans. They have names.
Yeah.
And we want to treat them with respect. So it's infusing all of that into something that's collectively beautiful, and people feel that it's different and special because we truly care. But it's putting in the systems in place to enable all of your team to care at a higher level.
That's amazing. I mean, it's interesting the companies you bring up too. I mean, I remember Tony Hsieh with Zappos. He describes his company as not a shoe company, but they're a customer experience company that just so happens to sell shoes.
Right.
You know,
totally.
I think that's just so important to remember. I mean, you weren't a nursing facility. You were a customer experience company that just so happened to take care of those who were in need at the time.
Right.
And that just propelled you to another level. How did you take what you learned in the nursing facility onto your next ventures?
I saw the tremendous impact that focusing on this thriving cultural foundation and with this ideal and using like your brand experience as your biggest, most important marketing tool and competitive advantage. I saw the impact that had for us. And I'm like, I am sold. This is amazing. I've got to continue to implement this whenever possible because people want to be treated as humans. People want something special. So in the next nursing home where I worked, it was a completely different scenario. Regulatory disaster. We inherited, Elizabeth and I were asked to go and essentially like rescue another facility that was about three times as large and that was going to be shut down by the state if they didn't in very short time frame turn things around. Like there was a lot of difficulty happening at this facility. Every moment was all sorts of, you know, whether the state was in there or the Department of Justice investigating abuse allegations or employees arguing and yelling at each other at the nursing stations. And it was a toxic environment. And we believed in what we had seen happen from the impact of the structure and framework that we did at Mission Care. And we're just in a moment where we did not have a moment. And where, and this is a big, one of the biggest learning points for me from that was that when you think that you don't have time to focus on ingraining your culture in and embedding your culture and truly helping your people feel empowered to live it and getting those people on board, defining that, codifying that, systematizing your culture, there is no better time to make that happen than when you don't have time. And I know it's counterintuitive. And I know for the vast majority of people, like they get it, but they also, as entrepreneurs, we get sidetracked with like the bigger fish to fry, right? And the one that we have so many hard things happening. And this to me was like crucible experience that prove to me that the time when you don't have time is exactly when you need it the most. And so from the very beginning, we instituted and implemented this system and we are able to pull out of the, I mean, I'm like condensing a Herculean task our team tackled together and I think is responsible for my baldness and all sorts of other things. But I attribute it to this laser focus on who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and then getting everyone at every level on board. We pulled through, we passed the test, no shutdown, and then started to rebuild the business after that difficult time. And then that was then even further solidified in me that this is the way to run a business. This is something that we can do. And so when the opportunity came up to run a home health agency, I did the same thing at Aspen in Southern California again. And then moving on into the airline business, I thought, gosh, well, I've seen this work in healthcare.
Why wouldn't it work in an airline business?
Why couldn't this work in a luxury airline business? And what I found is that the system works exceptionally well when you have people at like varying degrees of compensation at your organization where you are focused on creating an experience for people. And really all of us should be focused on creating experiences because we've really moved from a consumer-based economy, which is strictly transactional, into a relationship-based economy that's experiential. And so realizing that, again, here with Surf Air, we were a startup. We were at an incubator in Southern California and starting this luxury, all-you-can-fly subscription-based airline on a shoestring budget. We did get funding, but running an airline is very expensive. And so we had very limited marketing funds. And that was my charge, was to market and create an amazing member experience for us with little to no money. And we actually couldn't sell anything for a year and a half until we got approved by the FAA.
Really? Wow.
We were supposed to build up interest, excitement, buzz, you know, engagement, but it was basically like a year and a half of teaser campaigns, right? And we used it very strategically as an opportunity to learn exactly what type of experience our members would want and how it was going to be so special and what we could do to make it something unique even before they could even fly with us yet. And so we saw it in Surf Air and instituted this very mission-driven values-based culture that we trained on from the very beginning, cultural onboarding, and even pre-onboarding. We would embed and weave that into our selection process and our interview process and bringing on the right people that were going to bring our mission to life. You know, a lot of times, the vast majority of companies, their onboarding doesn't necessarily have a strong cultural component, or maybe they'll, you know, usually onboarding is like lots of paperwork and here's our procedures and this is what we do and how we do it. But we would spend 2 days focusing on the why we are doing what we're doing and why it makes a difference in people's lives and why your particular role, whether you're a mechanic, whether you're a concierge, a pilot, whether you're in the corporate office, the phones, whatever you're doing, you're helping each member of our team feel empowered to create something truly extraordinary and special in people's lives. So yeah, so then we looked to implement that with Surf Air and saw after we eventually got our FAA clearance and could sell memberships, we launched and we had, you know, 300 plus members. We had 88 team members. We had 16 flights a day and 3 airplanes. And in about 6 months' time from launch, we had an NPS, a net promoter score of 91, where most airlines, actually the airline average at the time was 15.
Oh, wow. Huge, huge difference.
So it's interesting. You wouldn't necessarily think like nursing homes and airlines have very much in common, but they're both very highly regulated industries. They have people at all levels of the organization, obviously, and people that typically have the most physical interaction with your client, your customer, your resident, are those that are traditionally making the least amount of money in the company. And we used to say, similarly to what you had said about Zappos, like we're a hospitality company. We just happen to be flying, you know, like, and we say that about our churro business now. It's like, we did a culture training a couple of days ago and it was like, we're just looking to deliver deep fried happiness to people. And like, we just want to be a vehicle for happiness. It happens to be that we make churros. And so anyway, what was I saying about Surf Air?
You're a hospitality company that just so happens to fly.
Yeah. And we really focused on that in every bit of our process there and every bit of what we did in developing the system, the culture, and really engaging with our team and empowering our team to deliver on that.
You say that the NPS score, I mean, you were at a 91, the average airline is at a 15, and I'm sure you had similar increases and differentiation between other nursing homes when you took over there and kind of instituted the philosophy of providing an excellent customer experience. But in a business sense, what other benefits did you or can you experience from this? I mean, that's great. You provide a great experience, but I mean, does it increase overall revenue? Does it help this way and that way? When I go to In-N-Out, I know I go there for the experience. So I know they at least gain the additional revenue from my double-double that I order. But how on a macro scale does that help your company?
Yeah, terrific question. What's so remarkable about both creating a thriving internal culture that empowers and executes this like breakthrough brand and customer experience is that this has dramatic business impact. Not only does it feel really good as a leader or as any person in the team, like it just feels good when you're making a difference in people's lives and you make people smile, but there are some dramatic business results that come from this. For example, there's a bunch of different research from everyone from the Harvard Business Review and others, McKinsey, et cetera, that have shown that customers spend 140% more when they have a positive customer experience, that revenues go up, costs go down, happiness skyrockets, loyalty skyrockets. We're talking like 10x loyalty. I mean, if you think about it, if you plug in your numbers in there, I mean, we saw that in all of the businesses. I see that right now with the churro business as well. People have a great experience. They share it. They're more apt to recommend people. That's what the NPS score is a monitor of, is this idea of like, how likely are you to recommend this to a family or friend? And so, you know, typically when I'm sharing some of these thoughts with others in either a consulting or business setting, we'll talk about Trader Joe's, and people are crazy loyal and amazing and love Trader. And it's amazing. They love Trader Joe's. I will ask them, okay, so you go to Trader Joe's. When you go, how many grocery stores do you pass between your house and Trader Joe's? And typically the answer is like anywhere between 5 to 8 grocery stores. And I always ask people, why do you do this? You can go to your grocery store that is closer, saving you time and money, but yet you go to all of that effort to go to Trader Joe's. Why? And they always say, it's because I just love it there. Like, I feel like they care. It's more intimate. I can get what I need. They're super helpful. They're friendly. They ring that bell. It feels like your neighborhood grocery store that cares. And so that is, you know, case in point on what you're describing here, like loyalty. You think about, and then all of those people that proactively share that love with others, you know, because they've created such a standout experience. And the good news about all of this is that because all of us have, like we talked about the mediocre or the abysmal airline industry NPS score, the good news in all of this is that we are so accustomed to mediocre and terrible experiences that when someone does something, even like they just look us in the eye, like I said, it's these small things. They smile, they say welcome, they aren't mean, they like care, they ask us how our day went. Whatever those little things are, go such a far distance in establishing this idea of an extraordinary brand and customer experience, because they treated you as a human instead of as an object, instead of, you know, a transaction. And so luckily for those of us that want to continue to level up and grow and develop our business, there's a lot of little things that we can do to infuse that consistent commitment to the humanity of the people in front of us that really can have a dramatic impact on our business in very tangible results. You'd think about like levels of turnover as well. If your team feels empowered and feels like you care about them, that they feel like they're part of a bigger cause, a cause that's great, and they're on board, your level of turnover will go down, which saves you tons of money, tons of effort, the longevity of those team members. I mean, they'll just be with you a longer amount of time as well. And you want to capture that collective experience for you as you continue to grow your business. So
loyalty just pays eternal dividends, really.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we all know it's like 5 to 25 times more expensive to get new customers than is to keep the existing ones. And so when you talk about like any sort of hiccups, because everyone, no one's perfect, so everyone makes mistakes, but in that service recovery, how, you know, if you're putting in all of those systems, you're not only keeping customers that are very hard to get in the first place. It's so interesting. We got a 1-star Yelp review from Churros like literally maybe a week and a half ago. And I immediately respond. I mean, that's like, I have a heart attack every time something that happens. And I don't know if everyone reviewing knows that, that business owners like almost literally have heart attacks when you do that to them. And so I saw this 1-star Yelp review, immediately responded, of course. And I'm like, oh my gosh, so sorry. Obviously not up to our high expectations. That's terrible. And there's nothing worse than a bad churro. And I'm so sorry. It was, you know, too crispy for you and didn't have filling and whatever, and just apologized like mad and said, please give us a second chance to make it right. And so she did, and she came back and we comped her churros. And next thing I know, she writes a 4-star Yelp review. I mean, she changed her review and made it a 4-star. And literally that is what some research is showing, is that people's view, once you do something positive to recover from where you messed up, they will increase their review by 4 times when you go above and beyond to right the wrong and to make them happy. And I saw that very literally play out for me like just a week and a half ago.
And it's very interesting you say that. I mean, it has such a profound impact when you go and you own the mistake, if there was a mistake or something that caused a negative customer experience. But on the other side, it causes just enormous irreparable damage if you are tone deaf, if you do not respond, and you don't acknowledge their experience.
Yeah, I think this again boils down to we are humans interacting with humans. And the companies that realize that are the ones that will continue to win. You know, AI, absolutely, let's use it to create a more human experience. This is what we're longing for right now. And it's been punctuated by the pandemic and by everything else that is happening in the world right now. We want to be recognized as humans and we want to be heard. We want people to see us. We want people to care.
Absolutely.
We're expecting more from companies. We're expecting them to understand who we are and to care. And the companies that are slow to react to that, that are not getting on board, many of those are the companies that are no longer around because they haven't adapted to this new economy that we're in of this idea of building a relationship with your customers, your clients, whatever you call your customers, you know, and recognizing and helping the human that is in front of you. Certainly you can use technology to like optimize that experience, but this is a relationship that each of us as business owners and in whatever area of influence we have within a business can fully embrace. And this is what can differentiate us from the competitors and really help people be more and more loyal and advocate and share. Like 70% of us buy based on how we feel. So what are we doing to architect feelings that are going to help us continue to be successful as businesses, but also to honor the humanity that we work with on a constant basis?
Fascinating stuff. I love how much impact you have on people just with their experience and, you know, beyond, above and beyond the transactional, you know, experiences that we've had for so long. It's just so much more than that now. And especially within this pandemic and a lot of the social uprising and, you know, upheaval that we're experiencing as well. How do you feel that that experience transitions into a pandemic type economy as well as, you know, with a lot of the social things that are going on right now? How do you help people make sure that they're having a human experience while maintaining that social distancing and, you know, health precautions that we need?
I think what we've learned throughout all of this is that, first of all, I believe that any challenge that we're faced with collectively or personally is a fertile ground for creativity and innovation and opportunity. And what I've seen with the pandemic in particular is that this idea, it has been punctuated personally to me. I think we have all felt that this concept of social distancing has like underscored, highlighted, punctuated, whatever you want to use, whatever powerful verbs you want to use to make it stand out. But this idea of we need other humans, we want other humans to interact with us and to be heard and seen and understood. And so with social distancing, I think it presents an awesome challenge for us as business leaders to create. So within the confines of social distancing and adhering to health guidelines and whatever recommendations that we're being given to be responsible citizens and corporate citizens, it just means that we need to get wildly creative. So how do you do that when you can't? So maybe your smile is hidden behind a mask, you know, or where you used to shake hands, but that's not appropriate anymore in particular situations or timeframes. You know, how do you create that human connection? And I think it just means that we get to be creative. And what that looks like for your business and what that looks like for mine may be a little bit different, but I think it's accelerated the need for us to find ways to connect with people on a human basis. So people are longing for this. We were open throughout all of the pandemic with San Diablo Churros, and we did like quarantine survival kits where we partnered with other local vendors, Sobe Eats and Thirst and Reverse Charades, to provide like, it was fun. It was, you know, everyone was at home and they wanted to be able to eat and sick of their own meals. And so we would deliver things that we'd be sensitive to and adhere to guidelines. People wanted a bright light. And so we would smile. It's in the way that we interact with people. And even though they can't see your smile, people can feel your smile.
That's a good point.
Like, they can sense it in the tone of your voice. Like, you can tell whether someone is smiling over the phone, you know, or how, like, whether it's a customer service rep or whatever. So you don't necessarily need that visual to know that someone cares. And so it just becomes more and more important for us as businesses to put in elements where people know that we care. And some of that is simply adhering to the guidelines and being kind about things. Where, you know, now we're asking customer service reps in different businesses. Now they're essentially like mask bouncers, right? Like right. When I go into Costco, they're like, where's your mask? They're actually not like that, but they're usually very kind about it. But I've been in another situation where I was, it was not a pleasant experience. And so we're asking our team to do different things than they've ever done before. And so I think we just need to provide guidelines and even open up the channels of brainstorming and have meetings with our team. Like, okay, look, this is our mission. We want to create this great experience. How are we going to do this within these confines? So maybe that means we use different words to verbalize things that we used to communicate with a smile. Maybe when we're confronting people about masks and about guidelines, this is how we say it, or this is how we communicate it so that it doesn't come across as punitive, but like supportive and with that we care. And so I think that there's lots of different ways, but it is, in my opinion, even that much more important that we create a humanized experience because we are given so many confines and constraints.
Great, great point. I think that human experience is just so pivotal in creating not only a strong economy moving forward, but a different economy, not so much transactional, but more so experience-based. And I think that's going to show just how much we care on a human level and a personal level moving forward. Well, it's been a great conversation. Where can our listeners find out more about you, your churros, all of the above?
I'm on LinkedIn, Scott Craig Porter on LinkedIn. And then I have a website that I'm like shocked and really disappointed in myself that we haven't talked more about tacos, but we'll have to do that a little bit more. I did mention it at the beginning, but I am on the search for the perfect taco and use that experience to talk about all of this as well, culture and brand experience and how to create something that really breaks through the noise. And so that is the website, searchfortheperfecttaco.com, where there's a podcast, video series, as well as lots of tacos.
A lot to learn. Search for the perfect taco. Scott Craig Porter, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Chris. It's been so great to be with you.
You as well. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.